So we take our reading from the first epistle of Peter and chapter 4. First Peter and chapter 4. And we read here at verse number 7. First Peter chapter 4 and verse number 7. But the end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayer. And that's all I want to read just tonight for this meeting. There are many important circles today where this particular day is being regarded as a time of countdown by men who are in the world of commerce and by a number of chancellors of different countries. There is quite a bit of tension just now. They're hoping that they get their sums right, and they're hoping that they set the right standards, and they're hoping that they have their calculations right, because things are going to be fixed within the next few hours. Can it be changed? And those fixations are going to have a tremendous effect upon the markets and the merchandise of Europe for years to come. This morning in the Daily Telegraph, I noticed a photograph of a clock in Brussels. It has been up for quite a while, and on the clock it was so many days and so many hours and so many minutes and even so many seconds. Countdown to the euro. I'm not really too much concerned about that just now. That will give headaches to other people. I am interested tonight in the countdown to eternity. And I tell you, brethren and sisters, we would need to get our sums right. We would need to get our standards right. Because the countdown to eternity will have far greater repercussion than the countdown to the euro. Our clocks and our calendars and our calculations would need to be properly adjusted, and also our conduct. It was that kind of thing that was on Peter's mind. He wouldn't have known the jargon of the 20th century. But he did know about the concept, and it was that very concept that was in his mind when he wrote the words that we had just read. The end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayers. Self-evidently, that text divides into four. There's first of all the word of crisis. The end of all things is at hand. Secondly, there's what I'm going to call tonight the word of control. Because of the crisis, he says, be ye therefore sober. Then there's thirdly what I'm going to call the word of clarity. Be ye therefore sober and watch. He said, keep your head cool. Keep your mind clear. Keep your eyes open. Be awake. Be alert. Watch. No time for sleeping in. Watch. And finally, the word of communion. Watch unto prayers. I do trust that the Lord will help us to appreciate something of the momentous and the practical thrust of this short word of Peter. The end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayers. The word of crisis. This demands a little bit of explanation, because on the face of it, it doesn't seem to be true. Almost 19 centuries have rolled along since that the ink was dry when Peter wrote, "The end of all things is at hand." How do you explain it? If it was at hand in the first century, how is it we still haven't seen it, but we're almost at the end of the 20th? Well, there could be a number of possible explanations. Some of the critics of the Bible, they feel no compunction about saying, well, you know, the dear men were very sincere, but they just didn't get it right. That dear man, Paul, that talked about, "We which are alive and remain," he really thought that maybe he would be amongst the group that would greet the Savior. "We which are alive and remain." And Peter, well, he was just a fisherman, and he was beginning to grapple with these great thoughts, and they really thought the Lord would come within their lifetime, but these first generation Christians had a misguided perception, and they said, "It's at hand, it's right at your elbow." But if they had lived as long as us, they would have got a better picture of things. Well, we won't accept that as an explanation. The critics of the Bible say that's exactly what happened. It was a first century misperception. So it's not a matter of a misguided perception. Maybe the explanation is a double perspective. That could be. That could be. You know, when I was about 12, I thought a man of 70 was an awful distance away. I still do, actually. But I thought it was really, I thought you were talking about light years. Light years, they're not just as light now, but they're still quite extensive. A man of 70, I tell you, I would say that the old men of 70 in the meeting, when they're looking back, the space between when they were 12 and now is just a fraction. So that the perception that a boy has of 58 years is much different to the perception that an older man will have of 58 years. It could be a double perspective here, so that the end of all things is at hand. Here we are, human beings, with our small yardsticks and our little clocks, and we are measuring 18 centuries and 19 centuries, and you say, "My, oh my, it's a long time." We are just like the little boy at 12. But then above it all is a great God that inhabits eternity. And what seems a stretch to us, and quite a stretch at that, is little more than just a speck to him. It might be the perspective of a boy and an old man, the perspective of a human, and the perspective of heaven. Then, of course, there might be another explanation, and I think this one is coming closer still. It has been true, from Christ appeared, that the end of all things is at hand. You see, how would I describe it? It's nearly like as if human history, starting away with Adam, and running through to Abraham, and then on to David, and right down through the prophets, there was a line that was moving on and on and on and on, and then eventually the Lord Jesus appeared. The line that had been going like that took a turn. And instead of history running on, we are no longer moving towards a goal. We are running along the edge. We have reached the terminus. The incoming of Christ has brought the ages to a climax. He has now gone back to heaven. And whether it was AD 100, 500, 1600, 1900, history is not so much going on. We're just running alongside the very edge. And the great world to come can break in at any moment. And it's just as close to us tonight at the end of 1998 as it was to men that lived in 98. I mightn't get the picture over to you. I don't know if I'm doing it. We say a man coming to a cliff. He travels, it's a great broad cliff. We'll imagine it, say, a mile broad. Precipice. He travels towards that cliff for 4 miles. When he gets a yard from the edge, he's just at the edge. He takes a turn. And then he keeps going right along the edge for another mile. Now, he has been at the brink for all that space that he's going. He was moving this way to get to the cliff. Then he is to the cliff edge. He has turned, and he's right on the very brink. That's what human history was like from the standpoint of the Bible. Men were always moving forward on a line towards the coming of Christ. Peter knew that. He tells us in one of his chapters earlier, he said there was one was foreknown from before the foundation of the world. He was manifest in these last times. The end has begun. Christ is here. With the incarnation and the work of the Lord Jesus, history will never go any further in that sense. The probation is over. And from then right through the centuries, people have just been living on the brink. And Peter would tell the Christians in his day, he would tell us in our day, as we get to the end of 1998, he said, you believers, remember, the end of all things is at hand. I would say that if we could just appreciate tonight how close we are to things, it would likely have a tremendous effect upon our whole thinking and upon our whole attitude. This is different to what men of the world think. If you lift your newspapers and if you take down a glossy magazine, you will discover that men of the world think we're just beginning. It happened at the end of the last century. I understand it's happening now again. There's a wave of optimism sweeping across the world. You'll hear them talk all the time about being on the brink of a new millennium. The stage of infancy is almost over. Humanity is just about to come of age. We were never as close to the great utopia as we are. We're just beginning. We're about to make the breakthrough. We're going to make the breakthrough politically. And we'll soon have a world of peace, the likes of which has not been seen for centuries. We're on the edge. We're just about to begin. The years of turmoil and friction are about to disappear. Diplomacy and democracy is going to win. We're just about to begin. That's politically. Economically, these new currencies that I've been talking about, things were never being brought together just as much. We're just on the very edge of a new era of commerce and economic prosperity. We're just on the beginning. Religiously, medically, they say we never had as many discoveries medically as we have. We're just about to make the breakthrough. They tell us that we've been living for 150 years. I hope I don't have to stick this place for 150 years. No harm to them. And they say, we're just about to make the break. Technologically, cyberspace, internet, we're getting things, a global village. We're just in the beginning of a new world. That's what men are saying. The big men of this world, the public image, the optimist, just the start of a new millennium, the start of a fresh utopia. God says no. He says, the thing's over. He says, it's finished. He said, I tested them. And I sent my son. He said, they put him on a cross. And I have drawn the line. The end of all things is at hand. It would be great, brethren and sisters, if when each of us tonight takes down the old calendar and hangs up the new one, that we can just remember that the end of all things is at hand. We needn't be putting down our roots too deep in this world. We needn't be worried about pile driving in the sands of time. We needn't be putting all the eggs of our energy into the baskets of earth. We are standing and sitting tonight not on the threshold of 1999. We are gathering tonight on the threshold of eternity. The end of all things is at hand. Can I ask you tonight, are you ready for eternity? You say, I got saved 71 years ago. Well, that's great. But the more important thing is, are you ready for eternity? Am I ready for it? Am I really ready for that great future that will soon be breaking into the little space of time and taking us into an altogether different world, a world where fashion and money and entertainment and cars and curtains and clothes and carpets will mean absolutely nothing. The end of all things is at hand. I say again, I'm going to repeat it. I would say, I may be doing you good folks a spiritual injustice, but you can forgive me heartily just now, but I would say that there's probably not one in this meeting, certainly not in the little square in which I'm standing now, who has an appreciation of just how close we are to the very end. It'll change our attitudes. It'll change our appreciation. It'll transform our affections. And Peter would want the Christians just to be affected by the knowledge of exactly where they are. The word of Christ, it's not the beginning, the end has arrived. Then the word, I've called the second one, the word of control. He said, in light of the fact that you're just brushing with eternity, and you're right up against the end, in light of that, be ye therefore sober. That's a very interesting word. It's a word that's just the opposite of excess and extreme. It's a word that means healthy-minded. It's a word of balance. Mind you, as we do make our way through this world, I'm discovering more and more that we are creatures given to extremes. And it affects us all. There's hardly a thing more difficult for a Christian just to keep a balance. 9. Be ye therefore sober-minded. You know that in other parts of the Bible, this word is used for elders. In other parts of the Bible, it's used for sisters. Sometimes it's used for younger brethren, younger men, younger sisters. The apostle called constantly until it nearly becomes a little bit monotonous. He says, be sober, be sober, be sober, be sober. I used to wonder when I was a little bit younger, why the great emphasis on sobriety in the New Testament? I don't wonder just so much now. I can discover, brethren and sisters, that most of the problems, many of the problems that we have as Christians, is because Christians, I was going to say get off on the head, you know what I mean? Get on balance, way over to this extreme, and also way over to that extreme. The Apostle Peter, in the earlier part of this chapter, has been talking about people, and he says, you used to run to excess of riot. He said, those were petrol bombers out on the streets. Not at all, not that kind of riot. But he said, in your unconverted days, he says, you lived lives of total abandon. And he says, you went away out on the limb of licentiousness. And he said, you have no boundaries whatsoever, no balance whatsoever. But he said, now that God has saved you, he said, be ye sober-minded. A Christian needs to keep his mind controlled and avoid extremes. You know, the first, one of the early times that word is used in the New Testament is that poor fellow that was so reckless amongst the tombs, and so careless in his clothing, and so disrespectful to other people. It says, sitting close and in his right mind. Contact with Christ brought into his right mind. This word is not only the opposite of extremes, but it's the opposite of excitement. You know, a Christian needs to watch sensationalism. I'm expecting that in the next year, if the Lord still has not come, and I'll tell you the truth, brothers and sisters, I was at a meeting like this in another place last year, and I never expected to see another one of these meetings. I thought that 1998 would be the year when we would hear the heavenly calling. It maybe will be next year, I do not know, but if it's not, I'm expecting, you know, there'll be a great deal of sensationalism. Some of these prophetic propagandists for the year 2000, I tell you, they'll make some capital of it. Just you keep in mind that it's already 2,000 years since Christ was here. 1997 was about the year 2000. So we're over it. Oh, you see, that's a great relief. We're over it. We've actually survived it by about a year and a half. Don't be getting carried away. Don't be coming sensational. Where's the end of all things, Peter? We've got to sell our house. And Peter said, I'm going to sell my car, put my Mercedes up in the Belfast Telegraph, and I'm going to get rid of everything, and sell everything, and sell my farm, and we're going to stop preaching, and just sit and wait for the Lord to come. That's sensationalism. Notice, Peter, he says it's the end of all things, but he says, control yourself. He says, be very sober. No, let us, brethren and sisters, let us feel the pressure of eternity. But as we feel the exertions of the other world, may God help us to live with a spiritual control in this world. You know, there were people a little bit away from here, a fair stretch of water in between, and they were convinced by a certain Bible teacher that the Lord was coming in 1988. And they sold nearly everything that they had. And they wrecked their whole life. And they get carried away with just what I call excitement and sensationalism. And really, to put it bluntly, they made a fool of themselves. No, Peter says, don't be doing that. He said, we're at the end. He says, keep your hand and your heart filled with a sense of eternity. Keep in touch with the other world. But he said, be sober. Don't be given to excitement. Don't be given to extremes. And this word is also a word that's just the opposite of exaggeration. I think Peter, the Apostle Paul uses it in Romans 12. He says, let a man think more highly of himself than he ought to think. Don't let him have inflated opinions, exaggerated ideas of his own ego. But he said, be sober-minded. You know, it's a great thing for a Christian not only to be controlled in his thinking about events in the world, but to be controlled in his thinking about himself and his fellow believers and have a sober attitude the one to the other. We're living in a world of exaggeration. I listened to the news today. I was listening to someone coming down to the meeting, in fact. I'm interested in this euro thing, believe it or not. I'm afraid what will happen to all my dollars if the thing goes the wrong way. But anyway, that's my worry, not yours. I was listening, and they talked about all the parties that there are going to be for the end of 1998. Parties all over the world, Sydney and Melbourne. One of the news bulletins earlier on said they're expecting a party in Belfast of 10,000. You know what they told us at 7 o'clock there? The fellow, he said, it's 100,000. So I thought to myself, things are going on well. We are caught in a world of statistics and a big world of exaggeration, and people are just getting carried away. Peter says, don't you be getting carried away with the parties and with the foolery and with the riot and the revelings and the banquets. He said, you people are living on the edge of eternity with a sense of a greater world. Be ye therefore sober. A crisis. But people controlled in their thinking ready for the crisis. There's the word of clarity. Watch. Watch. As I said already, this is a word that has the idea of being alert. It's the opposite of indecision. In fact, the word that's translated watch in this verse, the Apostle Peter has already used it earlier in his epistle. You remember that interesting verse in chapter 1? He says, gird up the loins of your mind and be sober. That's the same word here. He says, you people are not to have that kind of a slackness. And you're not to be marked by that kind of a carelessness. And you're not to be marked as people who are just settling down and are relaxing and taking things easy. No, no. He says, gird up the loins. Don't be marked by idleness and indecision and indolence. Gird up the loins of your... And he said, be sober. Well, I think we can take that message just as we leave 1998. I said already, I think there is no time for slackness. It's no time for carelessness. This is not really, brothers and sisters, a time for settling down in this world. May we be marked by that kind of spiritual alertness that is so fitting. It's the opposite of indifference. You know, he talked about it again. He was very fond of this word. In the next chapter, he'll tell them, casting all your care upon him. Oh, you see, that's a lovely verse for the end of 1998. Casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. You say that's the kind of Christianity I want. That's a precious verse. I wouldn't want to take it away from any Christian. Let us take it all to our hearts tonight. But, you know, that's not armchair Christianity. You see, what do you mean by that? You know, people think, just cast all my care upon the Lord, and I just tell the Lord all about it, and it's all up to him, and he better do everything. Now, that's what Peter did. He said, cast all your care upon him. But the very next verse, he says, be sober, be vigilant. For your adversary, the devil, goeth about seeking. Oh, he says, don't forget to trust the Lord. He says, trust the Lord and put everything over them and trust him implicitly. But he said, don't take the Lord for granted. For he said, if you're marked by any kind of carelessness, he says, the devil will take advantage of it. That's the word here, be sober. No slackness, no indifference, surrounded by spiritual dangers. And it is a word, as I have to leave it, it's a word that has just the very opposite of intoxication. No alcohol. Well, you see, I think that's good advice for us. That's good advice for Christians not to be involved in alcohol. Well, you know, really, dear brothers and sisters, the thing is that Christians can be intoxicated with things other than alcohol. It's possible for a believer to imbibe things into his system that would blur his thinking. It's possible for a believer to take a drink from some little cup of earthly pleasure. It might be a hobby. It might be a pastime. And he just takes a drink from it at a time. But you know, you say, but there's no real harm in it. That all could be. In itself, you just couldn't classify it as sinful. But the negative side to it might be this. That the Christian dabbling at that kind of thing could be taking something that's having a dulling effect upon his spiritual senses. Leaves him not as clear in his thinking. It leaves him not as exercised in his soul. It leaves him not as alert in his attitude. I wonder just before I leave this point and before I'm stopping altogether, and before we leave this year, would there be any believer has come to this meeting? You look back upon the Lord's goodness. It's a time of reflection. But you know, the end of the year is also a time of stocktaking. And maybe there's some dear believer here tonight and you know that you're touching something in your life that's having a compromising effect upon conscientious Christianity. But Peter says, watch.
He says, don't touch anything that would intoxicate your mind and dull your sense of judgment.
The last little part of my text, of course, he mentions prayer. He says this will be the secret of it all. This will be the very thing that will get a Christian ready for the end time. This will help a Christian to have a sober mind. This will keep a Christian clear in his thinking. The end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayer. And indeed, I notice from the margin of my Bible that that word prayer in this verse is actually plural. It's not just watch unto prayer, but Peter seems to say, look, brethren and sisters, he says, this thing is so serious. He says, it's prayer. He says, it's prayer. He said, let your life be saturated with genuine prayer. Now, I have a confession to make, brethren and sisters, at the end of the year, I would say if I did my stock taking with any degree of carefulness, I could fill a long list of things in my life that have been lacking. But I would have to confess that offhand, the one thing that I would acknowledge to be most lacking in 1988 was prayer. How is it that the thing that we most need to do is the thing that we least want to do? There are times when I find I know away down in here, whatever there is talks to me down in here, away down in here, there's something says, David Gilliland, the thing that you need to do tonight is pray. And then there are many other voices say to me, something else to be attended to, something else to be done. And what the Spirit tells me I most need to do is the very thing that I find the flesh is most disinclined towards. Do you find it difficult? I don't find it so difficult to preach. You might think it's otherwise, but I'm telling you the truth. And I don't really find it difficult to study. Not at all. I find quite an enjoyment in study and reading books and all. But I'll tell you the truth. I find it a real struggle to pray. To pray. This night, 260 years ago, that is the 31st of December, 1738. Times in England were very bad. Politically, morally, and socially, things were abysmally low. Public houses were open on Sunday. The country was ruined by gambling. Sounds very familiar. In Fetter Lane in London, there was a meeting just about the same size as this one. That was smaller. There were 60 people at that meeting. They began to pray. And they prayed all night. One of the men at that meeting was George Whitfield. Another two of the members of the meeting were Charles Wesley and John Wesley. The spiritual need of the land so gripped the heart of those people that they wept before God. And it says that into that meeting, there came a sense of joy and power, the likes of which they never had experienced before. That was Old Year's Night, 1738. 1739 saw a revival sweep across England. George Whitfield preached to thousands. In the month of December 38 of that year, he had been chased out of the churches. They didn't want preaching like that. The men got together and they prayed. The man that was chased out of the churches, he went into the fields and into the open air, and he saw people scared by the hunger. I don't think that I'll spend the whole night in prayer. You never know what might happen to this meeting before it's over. If God touched our hearts, there's no knowing how it might turn out. We might not spend tonight in prayer, but I tell you, brothers and sisters, we need to pray. Things are so bad. Things in your family are so bad. Things in my family. Things in the assembly. Things in the nation. Things in the province. Things are slipping, and we haven't the power that we used to have. We are at the very end of this year and the end of all things. May God put it into our hearts to pray. The word's talking about is communication. Internet. What communication possibilities do not we have? We can touch the throne of God. May a sense of need and weakness and reality grip our souls so that this word of communication will be a deeper reality with us than ever before. That's all I have to say. I leave time for our brother. Peter says, the countdown to eternity, the end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayer. May the Lord bless this word and what we will for mercy.